This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Last fall, more than 153,000 students were studying at one of the dozen schools in Maryland's public university system. That's about 28% more than were enrolled in 2002, when William E. Britt Kerwin began his tenure as chancellor of Maryland's public university system. Chancellor Kerwin has shaped how and what the students at Maryland's public universities learn. He redesigned science, technology, engineering, and math curricula, pushed to expand online education, and made a higher percentage of school, made a higher percentage of school aid based on financial need. Last week, he announced that after 12 years in the chancellor's job and 50 years in higher education, he'll retire once a replacement is chosen. Britt Kerwin joins me now in the studio to talk about his tenure as head of Maryland's public university system. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Sheila. It's great to be with you.
What is the biggest difference in how higher education is done in Maryland now than it was in 2002 when you took the reins as chancellor?
Well, that's a good question, and I thank you for your opening comments. But nothing good happens in a large organization without a lot of people pulling together, and it has been a marvelous, wonderful 12 years, and I think we've made a lot of progress. I think the two characteristics of the system today that I feel very proud about is the commitment to excellence. I think we've seen institutions across the system rise in national prominence and noted for the excellence of their programmatic offerings. But coupled with that is a much greater focus on equity and opportunity. We've seen a huge increase in the number of underrepresented minorities at our institution. We've got a major focus on serving more low-income students. We have an important initiative we call Closing the Achievement Gap, to ensure that low-income students and underrepresented minorities graduate at the same rate as the traditional student population. So what I feel, I think, best about in terms of my tenure there is how we have worked together as a system to achieve greater excellence and greater equity.
Let me pick up on graduation rates. Only about 38% of students who enroll at Maryland's public universities graduate in 4 years. Among African American students, the four-year graduation rate is 18% system-wide. Why are those rates so low, and what should be done to make them higher?
Well, I think the for whatever reason, the federal government doesn't look at four-year graduation rates. The metric in higher education has been six-year graduation rates.
And okay, but a lot of us not in higher education and not shepherding children through higher education think, wait, less than two-thirds of students in this great state's public system graduate in 6 years?
It does vary greatly by institution. For example, at College Park, 70% of the students, or close to 70% of the students, graduate in 4 years. But many of our institutions are serving low-income students who have come from high schools where they may not have gotten the preparation they need to do college-level work. So they have to start with developmental work, as we call it. Many kids are working part-time. They drop out, come back to school. So, in this day and age, I'm not sure the traditional four-year metric for graduation that most people of my generation are used to and experienced when they went to college is relevant this year, because we've broadened the net. More and more young people coming to college, and as I say, many with from low-income circumstances, many not quite ready to do college-level work. So we do look at the six-year graduation rate. I will say one thing that I think is very significant. Over the last 6 years, we've gone from the average time to a degree in the system being almost 5 years. Now I'm talking about the average time, to 4.3 years. So half the average time it takes a student to get out of one of our institutions now is 4.3 years.
You mentioned broadening the net.
Right.
Has the net been broadened too much? Are we encouraging kids to start higher education who predictably won't end up with a degree and who perhaps could put that effort into something that would be more practical for them?
The way education has evolved in America, I don't think we're broadening the net too far. I mean, there are countries that have alternative tracks for high school graduates where they go into some sort of traineeship program. By and large, we haven't done that in America. And like it or not, a college degree, a four-year degree, has become the ticket to a good job and a high quality of life. And I think what we need to do in America is ensure more and more low-income students have a chance to come to college, get the kind of support they need to be successful in college. Because, you know, quite frankly, without greater success in serving more low-income students in this day and age, we're going to lose our national ethos of being the upwardly mobile society, the land of opportunity. I'll tell you a statistic that I think is very alarming long-term for America. If you're in the lowest quartile of income, a child born into the lowest quartile of income, you have about an 8% chance of ever getting a college degree. If you're in the upper quartile of income, you have an 85% chance of getting a college degree. Now, how is someone in this day and age going to have a chance to move up the economic ladder
without
a college degree? So absolutely, we need to keep the doors open widely. Now, it doesn't mean there'll be different schools that will serve the needs of different students. College Park, UMBC will tend to have highly selective admissions, but we have plenty of institutions that are open admissions. And we just need to ensure that we have the support available so that these young people have a chance at the American dream.
Well, of course, part of what makes it possible for some students in this day and age is financial aid and borrowing.
Right.
The Institute for College Access and Success, a nonprofit that looks at access to higher education, says almost 3 out of 5 new Maryland graduates have student loans. And of those carrying debt, the average student loan debt is more than $25,000.
Right.
Nationally, the average is about $29,000. What have you done to hold down the cost of college?
Well, I think this is an area where Maryland really shines. I mean, I think there are a lot of areas where Maryland really shines. But, you know, we have worked so effectively with state government, with Governor O'Malley, with the General Assembly, to ensure that there was adequate state support to enable us to hold down the growth in tuition. We are running at complete odds with the rest of the country where, you know, tuitions have gone up in double-digit rates for many years. Since 2008, the cumulative increase in in-state tuition and across the system is about 10%. That's in over a period of 4 or 5 years. It's gone up cumulatively about 10%.
How does that compare to the rest of the country?
I think the average around the country is in the 30 to 40% range. Maryland has the lowest rate of increase in tuition over these years of any state in the union. We've gone from being the state with the 6th highest tuition to the 27th highest tuition during this period, thanks to the good work we've done, but thanks in large measure to the support we've gotten from Governor O'Malley and the General Assembly.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with William Britt Kerwin, Chancellor of the University System of Maryland. He announced last week he'll retire from that role once a replacement is found. We're talking about higher education in this state. The University of Maryland University College is the country's largest online public university, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Public university.
Yes.
What's the future of online courses?
I think online courses are going to play an ever-increasing role in higher education. I mean, we're very proud of University College. What I think will evolve over time, and we're doing a lot of this already across the system, is bringing some of the benefits of online education into the traditional classrooms. so that so we are using the power of the internet, the information technology, the intelligent software, in what we call hybrid classes, where there's a professor in the classroom, but the professor is taking advantage of the power that exists through these new technologies. So I think we're going to see much more of that. And I'm actually, it's one of the things that makes me feel so optimistic about the future of higher education, because I think through the use of technology in traditional classrooms, we can both improve learning outcomes and begin to drive down the cost of educational delivery. And that's those are twin goals that we need to all move toward in higher education.
You're talking about equity and access. Let me ask you about historically Black colleges
right.
and universities, of which there are three in the university system.
That's
right?
correct.
A judge ruled last fall that the university system of Maryland had duplicated programs at traditionally white institutions, which hurt enrollment at Maryland's HBCUs. Negotiations between the state and the HBCUs on how to resolve the issue are going on. I presume you're not going to tell me what's going on in the middle of the negotiations. So looking ahead, what do you think your successor should do to heal this tension between the traditionally white colleges and the HBCUs?
Well, I think we have a very good and collaborative system of higher education. Our 12 presidents, including the three HBU presidents, work marvelously well together. And the judge cited the relationship between UMES and Salisbury,
University of Maryland Eastern Shore,
and Salisbury University, two of our institutions that are maybe 10 miles apart, that the collaboration between the two of them is sort of a model as to how higher education should evolve in Maryland. What I think will happen is we'll continue to see new programs develop at the the HBUs, programs that hopefully can attract more traditional students to those campuses to address the issue that the judge has rightly pointed out. It is important to note that the judge also ruled that there was no funding inequity between the HBUs and the traditional institutions, and that their missions had not been unduly compromised or constrained. So, but the judge did point to the lack of diversity, not at the traditional universities in the system, but at the HBU. So the goal now has to be finding means by which we can ensure that greater diversity does occur at our very fine HBUs across the state, including Morgan State.
Which is not part of the system.
No.
It's graduation season right now.
Right.
What words of wisdom do you have for Maryland's newest graduates?
Well, the words of wisdom, don't ever stop learning. You know, in a different era, maybe you could get an education and that was sufficient for the rest of your life and career. But in this rapidly changing world where new technologies, new ideas are constantly coming on to the fore, what is so important is that these students have learned how to learn and they'll keep learning the rest of their life.
Chancellor Kerwin, thank you.
Thank you.
William Britt Kerwin is Chancellor of the University System of Maryland. He announced his retirement last week. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead on Maryland Morning, but first here's Nathan to tell you how you can support the programming you hear on WYPR.